Just past the halfway point of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for Saturday, September 19th. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Rory McGoran doing a great job up. And, of course, Drew Mandel is soon to be a father, and we expect him to be back next week, and if not next week, the week after.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Chris Elkovich of Yahoo Sports joins us. Chris has not been on the show for a while, so it's great to have him back on. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Enjoying the last vestiges of summer.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a nice day today, but that wind, Chris, and the evening chill is already coming to the prairies, so I'm sure it's probably the same in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, pretty soon, I think.
You know, Chris, we haven't had you on in a while. I'm going to talk about, you know, the coverage of the NHL in general, and obviously you've written about it on Yahoo, the Blue Jays ratings, and the Jays game is going to be on this station at 3 o'clock today, and how they're just booming. You see the NFL ratings. Do you see hockey taking off in Canada just like those ratings have? Like, do you see any change forthcoming for this upcoming season in terms of the ratings?
Not really. I mean, I think the hockey ratings are you know, the number one. That's number one in Canada. And the old line in the TV business is hockey's first and everything else is second. Mm-hmm. I mean, you even look at the Blue Jays ratings. I mean, they're approaching 2 million during a pretty hot pennant race. I mean, Hockey Night in Canada does 2 million a night during the regular season. So, you know, hockey's number one. I don't think anybody's going to topple it. And I think that's the big challenge that that Rogers is facing, you know, when it comes to, you know, getting back the billions that they've spent on the NHL is how do you increase these ratings? I mean, last year they were talking about a 20% increase, which I think was one of the most, you know, deluded dreams I think I've ever heard of. And in fact, I think they ended up with 2% increase. You know, they might have grown a bit if the Leafs hadn't tanked so early, because the Leafs still do drive ratings in this country when it comes to hockey. So that's the challenge they're facing this time. You know, maybe if the Leafs get off to a good start and aren't as bad as people think they're going to be, the ratings might go up. But it's pretty hard to really increase that audience, you know, on a regular basis.
You know, you look at coverage this day and age, Chris, and I'm just kind of watching it evolve. And you used to have your pregame show, for example. You know, the Jets are on here on TSN, of course, and on our station. And you used to have a pregame show, maybe 10-15 minute lead in, and then you cut away from the game. Now you have the coaches' press conferences. You have the breakdown. Are we almost over analyzing the game at this point? But is that what drives ratings at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think almost. I think that horse left the barn some time ago. I mean, the overanalysis, you know, really is, you know, it's unbelievable at times when you see how much goes into these pregame shows and how many pregame shows there are. However, they do seem to draw an audience, and I think you know, when you put it out there all the time, yeah, you're gonna pick up a few stragglers who might not be watching otherwise. So. It's relatively cheap programming. You know, it's easier. It's more cost effective to put on a panel show than it is to, you know, put on a game. So in the end, it's probably a good investment for the networks and the radio stations.
Joined by Chris Elkovich of Yahoo Sports, talking about the NHL sports media in general. Chris does a great job for Yahoo and the Toronto Star before that.
Thank you. You know,
Chris, the coverage I find interesting in that. I'm not so sure how much, as a whole, hockey coverage has changed over the past, say, 10 years, but the dollar spent for it has just been booming, obviously, with cable being that demand. Are you surprised, though, that maybe the coverage and the angles and the different things really haven't changed that much?
Well, I think you did see a big change probably about 10, 12 years ago when they started to, you know, add a few more cameras and give you a few more angles. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that produce greater ratings. I think the evidence, or you know, I'm not sure the evidence is in on that one yet. You know, and as far as the rest of the coverage goes of the stuff around the game, I think what you've seen is you know, just a huge increase in the amount of people talking about it and all that. And I'm just not really sure. It's, you know. Is it selling the game any better? Is it giving mm-hmm. people greater insights? I mean, I think sometimes it does. I mean, when you see things like you know, those little fake arenas they have on the intermission shows and, you know, where they can demonstrate plays and things like that. I think those things add to the game, add to the understanding of the game. And I think you get a lot more of that than you certainly used to.
Chris, I think you raise an interesting point there, you know, talking about do certain elements of a television broadcast actually sell the game better? And I've talked about this with Richie before. I particularly like when players are mic'd up and you hear players, obviously you get into a situation potentially where you might hear an F-bomb or a four-letter bomb being dropped. But what are some things that you feel that maybe major television networks aren't doing that could sell the game better?
I mean, I think a lot of the I'd like to see a bit more, you know behind-the-scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, as to what goes on, you know, for example, on why certain players, you know, don't get the ice time that they should or the decisions that get made. You know, that would be wonderful. And we've seen some glimpses of that with some documentaries that were done in the past where, you know, they took the cameras into the dressing rooms and took the cameras into the GM's office. But, of course, the problem is this is all very sensitive information and... Right. You're only going to see what they want you to see, so that's always going to be somewhat limited. But I think beyond that, I'm not entirely sure there's anything left. We get so much analysis and so much access to these players now compared to what they used to get. It's pretty hard to sort of go beyond that.
Is it a catch-22, Chris? And Chris Zelkovich joins us from Yahoo Sports. Is it a catch-22 in terms of access to the players? The more access you get, the less they talk?
Well, I mean, I still, you know, I could think back to when I was a kid and how we looked forward to those between-period interviews, you know, on the one time that we got to hear, you know, Frank Mihaljevic or Dave Keon or somebody like that speak. I think we've seen them all, and not that those guys back then ever gave you any gems of, insight, but it's all pretty bland when it comes down to it, and I'm not even sure it's really even worth the airtime to give them anymore. It's, all you get is the we'll take it one game at a time and put our skates on one foot at a time kind of stuff. And it was very, very seldom does anything ever come out of it.
Yeah, I was watching Vin Scully last night, and the Dodgers, obviously, he's a legend. I mean, everybody knows that. But it kind of dawned on me when I do watch him, and I know he does the game by himself, but how the game has changed in terms of the play-by-play voice, being somebody like a Bob Cole, who you don't really talk if you're the color commentator during the whistle, if there even is a color commentator. And now you see different commentators, they're kind of telling you, they're not necessarily telling you what happened, they're providing you with information, even the play-by-play guy, providing you with information and calling the game. Which style do you prefer, and do you ever, Chris, see it going back to the old way, or are those days far gone?
I prefer the Vin Scully style, and I remember noticing this during the World Cup a few years ago, the World Cup of Soccer, when we suddenly had the British announcers, and there was one guy doing every game, and I realized that these guys, it's more personal. He's speaking to you, the viewer, and it just sort of brings you more into the game, and he's also not filling every second of airtime with commentary. Whereas the standard North American way of doing things is to have one and, heaven forbid, two other guys joining the play-by-play guy. And, of course, if they're getting paid to be on the air, they think they have to talk. And even if they say the same thing over six times, they'll say it. And or say something that, you know, a guy who has eyesight problems can still see, you know, and they still tell you, well, you know, yep, the puck's at center ice now. That kind of stuff just drives me crazy. Going back to that style, you know, you never want to count that out because, of course, you know, the retro thing often works, and it certainly would be a good way for networks to save a few bucks.
That's
if
true.
You only had one guy in the booth instead of two or three.
You know, Chris, Richie mentioned Bob Cole, and I don't care what anybody says, he's an absolute legend. And one of the best play-by-play broadcasters of all time. When you talk about play-by-play broadcasters, who are a few of your favorite right now in hockey to listen to?
Well, I agree with you on Bob. He nobody calls the game. And I remember he told me this years ago that his style was the Foster Hewitt style, which was to sort of go with the flow of the game, almost be background music. So in other words, if you don't listen to a lot of the words that Bob says, it really is just, you know, it sends chills down your spine sometimes at how exciting he can make the game sound. But if you listen closely, sometimes he's not making a whole lot of sense, and of course he still has some problems identifying players. But yeah, we kind of forgive him that. He is a legend. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like Jim Houston. I do. I think Jim Houston is a really great announcer. And the guy who I think is honestly the best is Chris Cuthbert. He's kind of handicapped by a voice that really isn't, you know, typical of an announcer. It's a little bit too high. As he once told me, dogs like it. But, you know, he really, to me, he's a guy who could call a game without anybody else in the booth and just do a great job.
You know, Chris, leave you on this last question here. The ratings in the States, you see the preseason NFL football ratings, the Hall of Fame game are eclipsing the ratings that NBC got for the Stanley Cup Finals, some of the games with Tampa Bay and Chicago. We've asked this question for so long, I'm not sure if there is an answer, but how do you carve out even more of a market in the States? Because we know that sports is driving television, and certainly is the case in Canada, United States, but why is still hockey not catching on maybe as much as they expected?
Well, I think, you know, hockey's actually made a few strides in the past few seasons, and, you know, getting on NBC and NBC Sports Network has certainly helped. But, I mean, hockey is always going to be just above a fringe sport in the U.S. It's just not part of their DNA. I mean, it's football, first, second, and third, then baseball, then basketball, and hockey's got to fit in there. Probably the same position that basketball is in Canada. It has a pretty hardcore group of fans, but, you know, it's pretty hard to grow that basic you know, body. So, but, you know, I mean, I think, you know, hockey definitely is a bigger presence on American TV today than it was a decade ago, that's for sure.
Do you think, you know, one other question to that. Are you surprised that ESPN, I wanted to ask you about this, are you surprised ESPN got the ratings for the World Cup, or the rights, excuse me?
Well, ESPN is kind of trying to get back into. I mean, I think it was a surprise, yeah, because they've sort of been out of the picture for a while. But I think you know, they just need more programming. I mean, they've got all those channels; they need stuff to fill it. So it definitely will help them. That's for sure.
Chris Elkovich of the Yahoo Sports Readers Canadian ratings every week gives you a great breakdown of the ratings of sports television in Canada. Appreciate your time very much. We'll speak to you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
After the break, we talked about Patrick Kane. Let's get the other legal issue out of the way. Slava Voynov topic. After the break, you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten to 11 Saturday morning. Goes flying by, isn't it? Seems like it always does. Sometimes you think 3 hours will be different than a two and won't fly by as quickly, but it seems to. The segment's brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, the official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. That gets me every time, by the way. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
So has Drew's wife, Laura, had this kid yet or what?
I don't know. Drew's really getting a lot of attention out of this one, eh? Texting last night, you know, here's this if I'm not there.
I didn't get a text.
You got the email.
No.
I got a text too, though.
I don't think I got an email either. You guys always exclude me from, you know, the serious topics.
About that. I did get a text. I can read the text if you want me to.
Sure.
You just said that I wouldn't expect me tomorrow. I said good. He didn't take too kindly to that. Slava Voynov. The issue with Slava Voynov is actually, you know, when we talk about the Patrick Kane issue, the comparisons, I guess, how things are handled. I don't think it's necessarily apples to apples because one party was charged and Slava Voynov, the other one is yet to be, yet to have the charges laid by a grand jury in the Patrick Kane situation. But Slava Voynov spent 90 days in jail and was released, and then there were issues in terms of whether or not he was going to stay in the United States. He was charged with assault, and he decided, and kind of cloudy in terms of the details here, but he decided to return to Russia voluntarily. As he overall, we can get into a little bit of the details of it, but overall, are you, I'll just give more details first as you throw it to you. Voynov pleaded no contest to a domestic battery charge on July 2nd, served his 90 days in jail, as I mentioned, and then upon his release from jail, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detained him, and he was facing possible deportation. Okay? And then here's a quote from Voynov. Earlier today, this is earlier this week, earlier today, I notified the National Hockey League, the NHLPA, and the Los Angeles Kings of my decision to immediately begin the formal processes of returning to Russia with my family. I sincerely apologize to those in and around the game of hockey who have been affected by my situation, and also to the players of the LA Kings. I wish the players of the LA Kings success in the future. Here's the Kings quote, because I want to provide both sides, or all sides, really. During this period of detention, the Los Angeles Kings decided he would, this is by the U.S. Immigration, the Los Angeles Kings decided he would no longer play for the team, the Kings said in a statement. We established a deadline of September 17th, the beginning of our 2015-16 training camp, to reach this outcome. Mr. Voynov's announcement today of his intention to leave the United States and return to Russia makes the termination unnecessary. As we've publicly stated, since Mr. Voynov's arrest last year, the Kings organization will not tolerate domestic violence. As part of that commitment, we will soon announce a series of conduct awareness training initiatives that reflect the values and principles central to our franchise. I mean, there's a PR element to that, Ezzy. I mean, you announce, it's good that they're taking these initiatives and they're going to be announcing these new, they're going to take, try and be more, provide their players with more awareness and the public, of course, in terms of these issues and how to deal with them. They're obviously, if they don't do that, there's a negative, I think, a negative connotation that goes along with it not being active. And I'm not saying it's not genuine, but I'm saying it's a reaction that you see in these situations often, PR-wise. How do you think the Kings, as a whole, not just what happened here, how do you think the Kings as a whole, as he handled this situation?
I think they've handled it the right way, Richie. As you mentioned in that quote, the release from the Los Angeles Kings, they were planning to move on without Slava Voynov. He served his time in jail. He was facing possible deportation to Russia. This should come as no surprise to anyone that Slava Voynov has just decided to go back to Russia. He's never going to play for the Kings again. The Kings have already said they're going to terminate his contract.
Do you believe that we would have terminated his contract had he not gone back?
Well, if they terminated Mike Richards' contract, who didn't go to jail,
why do you think?
Why wouldn't they have terminated Slava Voynov's contract? Then you're dealing with a hypocritical situation where you've terminated one player based on allegations,
but they
and
say
an ongoing
here,
investigation, as opposed to Voynov, who has been charged criminally with domestic abuse.
Well, they say his intention to leave makes the termination unnecessary. So why did they wait so long to terminate his contract, or say that they were going to, and they terminate Richard's contract? That's why I think, I mean, you have to read into this. It's just the ability of the player. That's why we ask about Patrick Kane. The ability of the player very often plays a factor in these decisions. And I say that because Mike Richards isn't the player that he once was. Slava Voynov was an integral part of the Kings' right side, top four defenseman. And his value to the team was greater than Richards. It seems like that played a factor here, doesn't it?
And this goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, you know, Gary wrote about with Cookie Cutter Justice. All three of these cases are different, especially with Slava Voynov, where he has spent time in a California jail, whereas Patrick Kane has not been even charged with anything yet. So I think that the Kings, you know, we could sit here and talk about whether they, I personally believe they shouldn't have terminated Mike Richards' contract. I agree with Huss, who's talked about this on his show. I don't think Richard should have been terminated. I think that they should have helped him more with his situation and not basically tried to just dump his salary off. Slava Voynov, I don't think he should ever play in the NHL again. I think there is no room in society at all. I think it's disgraceful to ever lay hands on a woman like that. So I think Voyanov, I think they should, they have gone about it the right way. He doesn't deserve to play for the Kings. He doesn't deserve to play in the NHL ever again. He's 25 years old. He'll probably have a decent career in Russia, Richie. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, you don't deserve a second chance in this situation. You do something like that, you have to live with the consequences. The consequences are the 4 years and $19 million left on his contract is bye-bye. He's not getting that, or he's not going to get all of it, or most of it. So, I mean, now for me, the question is the LA Kings defense good enough to move on after Slava Voyanov and Robin Regier is retired? You know, you've still got Drew Doughty, who we both agree, Richie, is the best defenseman. But now Slava Voyanov, you know, officially now is gone. You know, can Christian Ehrhoff and, you know, Braden McNabb and
those guys aren't Slava Voyanov.
Some other defensemen. Can they,
on the ice.
Can, are they good enough to get this team not only back into the playoffs, but back to where they want to be? And that's, you know, in the Stanley Cup final. I don't think this team is just happy with they'll take getting back into the playoffs, Richie. But I think this team, when you talk about Andrei Kopitar, who's a pending UFA, you talk about some other players like Jeff Carter and Marian Gaborik, guys that are in the primes of their careers and guys that have had success, won two Stanley Cups in the last 4 years. These guys, you know, have their sights set on another Stanley Cup. I have some questions and concerns about the LA Kings defense, especially with Regier, who I think they hoped would play another couple years.
I think they wanted to sign Cody Franzen personally and weren't able to make it work cap-wise.
I think that's probably right.
But, I mean, Milan Lucic made that a difficult task. He's a pending UFA.
I think that the Kings' defense has some question marks, and that was the strength, one of the strengths of their team. I mean, they were strong from top to bottom, right? Down the middle and goal and everything like that. But as far as Slava Voyanov goes, again, I think, you know, I made my point pretty clear. I think, I personally think it's despicable what he did. He went to jail. Why should he deserve to play in the NHL again? I don't think he has that right or deserves that anymore.
Frank Saravalli of TSN does note that because he left, the Kings do not need to ultimately terminate his contract. Did not need to. Doesn't mean they couldn't have. The defenseman will remain the property of the club should he ever attempt to play in the NHL again in the future. In that case, if Voyanov were somehow able to reside in the U.S. again, the NHL would also need to reinstate him. However, that's unlikely. So he just notes that. At the end of the day, they do cut Stoll, Richards, and Voyanov, or they have them leave the team, all guys who have gotten themselves into some kind of trouble this offseason or for the past, 12 months or so. At the end of the day, though, I think that their approach to dealing with these issues has to change, and I think it will change. And Dean Lombardi has said that he's, you know, can handle these issues better in the future, and you hope that he can. We're going to leave all the legal issues. Let's talk only hockey for the last hour. I mean, enough's enough, okay? We ready to go? We got a lot to talk about, Ezzy. We are going to discuss. We got a little McDavid in there. We're going to talk about Jonathan Huberto signing. Yuri Tolusti signs. Matt Zuccarello back. Max Pacioretty, new captain of the Habs. Tons to talk about on the Legal Curve Hockey Show over the final hour right after this.
Legal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Rory McGoran in studio. This segment's brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtor of Legal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Richie, Frank Zappia has been tweeting at us. He's at down at FanFest at the Iceplex, which I believe goes till 2 p.m., so if you have a chance, get down there. The TSN 1290 crew is down there. I believe Dennis Bayak is also down there.
Looks like Dennis is interviewing Shevadayoff in this picture.
That's right. So check it out. Get some autographs. You know, get some merchandise. See some Jets practice. Have a good time.
It's good for the fans to be able to experience that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is the second annual Fan Fest, of course, and I tried to go last year, but they wouldn't let me in. So.
You were rejected.
No, but
you were that media
Yeah, the media isn't allowed to participate, but definitely go down there and check it out if you haven't gone down already.
I wonder if Dennis and Chevalier are talking about, like, I can't say you have to wonder, because we've already been tweeted that apparently there have already been questions about Ladd and Bufflin, so those should be topics that you're going to be hearing a lot about.
NHL news and notes.
Well, we have some breaking news.
Don't pull the bumper out.
This isn't NHL breaking news, but I just received a text from Drew, and a baby has been born.
Yeah, baby was born at 9:45 or so. So, I mean, it begs the question why he wasn't here at 10:30 to do the rest of the show. And priorities. Could have even done the first two segments.
So the baby was born about an hour and 15 minutes ago. Drew should be able to get here in time for at least rapid fire.
At least rapid fire. We'll leave it at that, though. Congratulations to Drew, of course, and to Laura. This week, guys, Jiří Tolusti, former Jet, of course, signed a one-year deal, didn't take a PTO, and we heard a lot about him not wanting to take a PTO, and clearly him and his agent played that well in the sense that they were able to get a guaranteed deal, although it's only $800,000, only, quote-unquote, in NHL terms, not in real-life terms. What do you think, Ezzy, of Tolusti going to the Devils for 1 year, $800,000?
Well, Richie, I'm not the biggest Jiří Tolusti fan, and when he was acquired by the Winnipeg Jets...
Neither am I.
I mentioned that, and I think it was telling that he wasn't re-signed by the Winnipeg Jets, and they're going to go with younger players. Look, at the New Jersey Devils are not going to be a very good team this year, and nope. And this is coming from a guy, as you know, Richie, who follows the New Jersey Devils and is a fan of the New Jersey Devils, but it's going to be a rebuilding year here. I mean, Ray Shiro has come in and really cleaned house, gotten rid of everybody. Even Chris Lamoriello isn't involved with the Devils organization anymore. So, you know, it's a new GM, new coach with John Hines, and it's going to be a young team. We had Bryce Salvador on 2 weeks ago. They're obviously going to be going with a younger decor with, you know, Adam Larson and Severson and Eric Jelena and all these guys.
Talented players,
but younger. Right. Younger on defense, younger up front. And, you know, they need players like Jiří Tolusti to insulate some of the younger players. And so, you know, the Devils traded for Kyle Palmieri, so he's going to be in there. But a lot of the offense is going to fall on the same players as it did last year. You're talking Travis Zajac, mm-hmm. Mike Camilleri, mm-hmm. Patrick Eliash. I mean, Zubras is gone. Ryan Clough is retired. So essentially, I look at it like this.
Let's talk about Clough.
Sure.
I want to quickly get it before
you go. Unfortunately, he's only 32 years old, and his career is over after, you know, too many concussions. And you know,
or too many. We're talking like 10.
Oh, absolutely, Rich. And that's why
that's a lot of concussions.
He didn't have any choice. I mean, he didn't play much last year. And, you know, Lou Lamoriello signed him to a pretty big contract, actually. But he's a guy that, you know, just he couldn't stay healthy.
Couldn't. And unfortunately, played a physical style, really had his best years with the San Jose Sharks. Ezzy,
yep.
Florida this week signs Jonathan Huberdeau to a two-year, that's what you call the classic bridge deal, $6.5 million contract, $3.25 million AAV, average annual value. The important thing to note is the first year is $2.5 million, the second year is $4 million, and the reason that is important is because after the second year, which will be the fifth year accrued by Huberdeau under the cap, under the CBA, he will then be arbitration eligible, and the team will have to qualify him at $4 million salary. What do you think of that deal? And do you like the bridge deal for Florida and for Huberdeau? Who do you think it's better for?
That's a good question, Rich. I think after the PK Subban bridge deal, I think it always makes people nervous, especially the team, a guy wins a Norris, for example, and then they really have to pay him a lot of money. I'm sure that Jonathan Huberdeau's agent and Dale Talon were talking.
Alan Walsh, by the way.
That's right. And, you know, I'm sure they were talking about a longer term contract. And in this case, you know, you'd have to probably say it could end up going both ways. Like right now, $3 million for one of your top players looks pretty good. And if Jonathan Huberdeau is able to get into that kind of next level, you know, go from a 45, 50 point guy and then go into the 70 to 80 point range, which I believe a guy like Jonathan Huberdeau, especially, you know, when you're talking about, whether he's playing with Nick Bjugstad or if he's playing with Alexander Barkov.
Both great players.
Both great centers.
Yeah. Bjugstad more of a shooter, Barkov more of a passer.
I think you could see this the next couple of years. You know, you could see Jonathan Huberdeau at the very least maintain what he put up last year. And so, I would probably say it favors Huberdeau more. But on the other hand, you know, if his offense, it's all based on numbers, right? So if Jonathan Huberdeau kind of maintains that same pace, which
well,
we
54
could
see, points last year, yeah, in 79 games, yeah, quiet 54,
yeah,
points.
That's why to think that he could increase those totals by 10 or 15 points. I mean, Huberdeau's an offensive player. I mean, he's not, you know, if you've seen him play, and Jonathan Huberdeau's not a power forward. I mean,
no,
this guy's all about skill. And for this Florida Panthers team, who, you know, I have some issues with, you know, some of the makeup of the team here. I still think, you know, I don't know, quite frankly, if they've done enough in the offseason to become a playoff team, Rich. I still think, you know, they're an excellent team from the net out. I think Roberto Luongo brought a lot of stability in net, and Aaron Ekblad obviously showed that he's already a guy that can come in and be an effective defenseman, you know, winning the Calder Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a team that's definitely on the upswing.
Well, your core is Bjugstad, Barkov, Ekblad. That's a,
yep,
good core.
Yep.
That's a really good young core.
Yep. And, you know, the big trade was, you know, acquiring Riley Smith, you know, from the Boston Bruins.
Makes him faster, makes him more skilled.
And he's a good forward.
Yeah.
He's a really good player. And, you know, I like that move, but, you know, I still look at the team and, you know, they're a little top heavy. They're not as strong,
yep,
in the bottom six. You know, Dave Bolin hasn't worked out, you know, quite like they wanted him to. And then, you know, you hear that, you know, even a guy like Lawson Crouse might be given a shot to make the team.
Apparently, yeah, apparently first two games, nine games.
For me, I mean, even though he's a big power forward,
yeah,
you know, you could probably argue that he's probably better served one more year in the OHL. And when you talk about, you know, players being rich. So I like the Huberdeau contract. But, you know, I could see this easily working more in his favor, and then the Panthers having to really dish out the money for the third contract.
Very possible. What do you think, Ezzy, of the decision of the Montreal Canadiens? We have a funny clip about this. Maybe Rory can get it going here. But Max Pacioretty, being named captain. Here's the clip. Listen to this first.
He said, open your front door. And I opened the front door, and I didn't see anything. So, unfortunately,
you went to the wrong house.
once he saw what Chaucer was, they both pulled up and knew right away, and nothing was said, but it was something I'll remember forever.
If you didn't hear about it, Max Pacioretty. Pacioretty was voted by his teammates to be the captain of the team, which is a real real honor for him. And when Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien went to his home to tell him in person, they actually went to the wrong house. They called him, told him to open his door, and he said, yeah, I opened the door, and the door wasn't open in front of him. So they were down the street. That's a funny story, of course. I thought it should have been P.K. Subban, as he, and Max Pacioretty, don't get me wrong, is a great player. We talked about this about a week and a half, I think 2 weeks ago, sorry, about who we thought should be the captain. I thought it should be Subban, but Pacioretty is a good choice, no?
Well, and the players voted him in, right? So it's not just Marc Bergevin or Michel Therrien.
Absolutely.
Who picked him. It was the players. I agreed with you last week, Rich. I thought it should have been P.K. Subban. I think, you know, he's their best defenseman, best player. Well, again, when you have Carey Price there, maybe not best non-goalie, let's call him
fair.
That, best skater. But Max Pacioretty is a fantastic player, and, you know, I know we talked about it last week about how, you know, sometimes he lets his emotions get the best of him, but, I mean, this is a guy who has only played with one team, and, you know, he really exemplifies all those good qualities of a leader, and I think as he gets older, because he's still only 26 years old,
I know.
As he gets older, I think, you know, he's going to get those emotions in check, so it's a good choice, and, I mean, P.K. Subban is obviously still a leader of this team. As a guy like Brendan Gallagher is, that this is the core of the team, right? You're talking about Pacioretty and Subban and Gallagher and Price and, you know, Galchenyuk and you know, Plekanec, we're not sure, probably might be a guy who's probably going to play his last year in Montreal. But, you know, funny clip that we played of Marc Bergevin there, And yeah, I think even though Subban might have been our choice and a lot of people's choice, I don't think you can go wrong with a guy like Pacioretty, because he's shown that when you need him to get the big goal, he can do it. And I think the issue with the Montreal Canadiens over the last couple of years, it hasn't gotten them over the hump, you know, Eastern Conference Final 2 years ago and then getting defeated in the second round last year, it's that they haven't had that supporting cast.
That's right.
And that's why, you know, hopefully a guy like Alex Semin helps out. Hopefully, you know, Zach Cassian, you know, improves on his play from last year with the Vancouver Canucks. You know, the Canadiens are always going to be a good defensive team and have the best goalie in the world, but I think they need other players to chip in and take some of the burden off guys like Pacioretty and Plekanec and Galchenyuk.
Don Waddell had some scathing comments about Alex Semin the other day. I heard those saying he's not fast enough to play. He played in the perimeter, all that stuff. It's like, almost wondering, everybody knew this before you signed him. I don't know why that's suddenly yeah. News. Okay, as one thing I want to say about the Pacioretty captaincy, I like that he's under a long-term deal. I think sometimes you get an issue when you name a guy captain with 1 or 2 years left in his deal. There's uncertainty and all that. And I think with Pacioretty, he signed for 4 more seasons at a really reasonable $4.5 million cap hit from 26 to 30. Those are the right years. You mentioned, you know, his age. The right years to kind of develop behind the scenes. And then now he's got the pressure, but he's more adept at dealing with it than he was before. And they know he's there for the long haul because, I mean, you're not going to get much better value than 4.5 for a guy who can score 30 to 35 goals with the release and the skating ability he has. When we come back, we talked earlier in the show with Joe Haggerty of CSN New England about Claude Julien being on the hot seat. Well, we kind of do this every year. Who are the other coaches on the hot seat, and how hot do we think Claude Julien's seat is? We'll talk about that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Saturday morning, 11:18 on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba's 40th annual luncheon. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. For over half a century, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba has been making a philanthropic impact, providing funding to both Jewish and non-Jewish community organizations alike. On October 29th, join the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba at its 40th annual luncheon, featuring a keynote address from Rick Frost, CEO of the Winnipeg Foundation, on the topic of sustaining our culture of generosity. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to the 40th anniversary luncheon, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 477-7520. Why do you have to say 204 if everything's still 204?
Well, I think because you now have to dial 204.
I get that, but it's like www. You have to type it in, but nobody says it anymore.
You don't actually have to type it in.
That's true. Actually, you don't have to type it in.
But
people still type it in, right?
It's a good point regardless. Like, I feel like it makes more sense to have to tell someone your area code if they don't live in the same area code or city that you live in. But when you tell, like, if I was to tell you, like, my new phone number, I think you'd just assume it was a 204 area code. But
there is no other area code, is there?
I think there might be another Manitoba area code
now. Not yet.
Like, if you're up north or something, I don't know.
Have you dialed?
What do I work for, MTS, Rich? Like,
well,
what
no,
do you want
but
from
yeah,
here?
But I'm just saying, like, you know, 204. There's still no need to read it. I say it now, but I just wonder why.
I think you should just keep reading that area code.
Well, we know Drew's on the hot seat. Although after this hosting job by me, I'm not so sure how hot the seat is.
he's on the father hot seat.
Yeah, exactly.
Drew knows how to, like, change diapers, and he knows how to all that stuff. Like, someone's explained, like, Laura's, like, briefed him on that.
Yeah,
I guess
know.
Laura's been changing Drew's diapers for a while.
Who do you think gets it on the hot seat? I mean, Claude Julien is clearly on the hot seat when a GM is telling him how to coach his team. First problem. Like, I'm surprised that they just didn't do full-scale changes. And whether or not you owe it to a coach, Claude Julien's got a pedigree and a resume that'll get him another job. I don't know. You don't have to feel bad for the guy. He's coached for Team Canada. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's done terrific work with the Devils and the Habs and the Bruins. So I wouldn't have any concerns with him getting another job. What coaches do you think are on the hot seat, though, Ezzy?
That's a good question. And I think you know, Claude Julien is kind of the popular answer, Rich. And I tend to agree with Joe Haggerty that because of his track record of success, I don't believe he's on, maybe I shouldn't say he's not on the hot seat potentially, but maybe there's not as much pressure on him. But when you look around the NHL, especially teams that didn't make the playoffs, like the Bruins, mm-hmm. you know, is Daryl Sutter on the hot seat in LA, a team that won the Stanley Cup and then didn't make the playoffs? I mean, again, Daryl Sutter is a coach that I really like, and I'm not sure if he has more than 1 year left on his contract. I think he has a couple years left on his contract, if I'm not mistaken. But I think teams, Richie, that especially haven't made the playoffs in a long time, or for me, even teams that didn't make the playoffs last year after making the playoffs the previous year, are teams that would be more on the hot seat. And I think, you know, Bob Hartley was a guy who we talked about early last season as being a guy on the hot seat. And what happened? Calgary shocked everybody and made the playoffs. But I also think that coaches in their first years are on the hot seat. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Todd McClellan in Edmonton. There's a lot of pressure on Pete DeBoer in San Jose. We haven't talked about San Jose in a while, but, I mean, Pete DeBoer going into San Jose for a team that they're not rebuilding. They want to get back into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They still have Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau and Joe Pavelski and Logan Couture. I mean, this is still a veteran-laden team. Mm-hmm. It's not a team that, you know, is going to be happy, you know, just having an improvement over last season. They want to get into the playoffs. What about Bruce Boudreau? Anaheim loses to Chicago in the Western Conference Finals. And this is a team that has their sights set on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, the Anaheim Ducks will make the playoffs this year, so Bruce Boudreau is not going to be fired at all. But I'm talking about being on the hot seat.
You're telling me that the Anaheim Ducks are fourth in their division in December, are playing very poorly, that Bruce Boudreau may not be on the hot seat, regardless of the fact that he came within one game of making it to the Stanley Cup final?
No, I think if Anaheim Ducks are struggling early on in the season, even in the first two or three months of the season, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a change, Rich. But I don't see that happening, first of all. But I also, I'm talking, you know, again, more so in the terms of, you know, how they perform in the playoffs. Because the Anaheim Ducks, again, they want to get back to the Stanley Cup final and win the Stanley Cup, right? They're not going to be happy with just making the playoffs again. You know, and then, you know, a coach who we haven't mentioned yet, who I know you believe is on the hot seat, is Ken Hitchcock.
I got five names on my list.
Ken Hitchcock. 1 year left on his contract in St. Louis. The St. Louis Blues, you know, they made a few moves in the offseason. Not that many. You know, Tarasenko's 8-year contract was probably the biggest one. But, you know,
but
they made
didn't
it.
Change
made,
the roster made, composition. And we're talking about made, coaches on the hot seat on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show right now.
Yeah, and you're talking about, you know, a trade between the Blues and the Capitals to bring over Brouwer and, you know, for Oshie, and you made a couple moves. But for me, Ken Hitchcock, again, I'm speaking more in terms of hot seat as far as the year as a whole, not guys that I think are going to fire during the regular season, guys that I think are in jeopardy of losing their job after the playoffs are over. Because I think it's easy. Okay. I think it's easy to say, well, if this team struggles early on, like Peter Laviolette with the Philadelphia Flyers 2 years ago, mm-hmm. right? If a team like that, if any team, Richie, starts the season off winning one out of the first seven games, then I think that coach is in jeopardy. It doesn't matter if you're Ken Hitchcock or John Hines, well, first-year coach for the Devils.
I mean, it's true. When you look at all the coaches, how many of them are new within the first year or two, and how can they already be on the hot seat? I have five names. You've mentioned a few of them already, Ezzy. Ken Hitchcock, I think, for sure is on the hot seat. If they have regular season success again and he loses in the playoffs, I think he's out. Based on his own decision, but I think he'll be out in any event. Claude Julien for sure is on the hot seat because Joe Haggerty tells you when the GM's making decisions on style and the way you're going to play, that's always a problem. Bruce Boudreau, I agree with Ezzy. I think he's on the hot seat, but I disagree with you, Ezzy. I think that if they have a bad start 20, 30 games in and he does not having the effect that they want him to have, I think he might be gone in the middle of the season. And then the other two guys I have on my list are Todd Richards, because Columbus had all the injuries last year, but they should be a playoff team. And if they struggle and they're not performing well, I think he might be on the chopping block. And then the other one's Mike Johnston. I mean, Pittsburgh, I actually think, had a pretty good offseason for the kind of the mess that appears to be there for sale, and nobody really knows who's in charge. But you know, a ton of coaches are sitting there saying, oh, I'll coach Crosby Malkin. Yeah, yeah, I'll come in. Oh, whatever you want to pay me, I'll come in. And Mike Johnston was like their seventh choice last time. And he had a difficult job last year. And you know what? Did they underachieve? Sure. Was his roster as good as it is this year? No. So they'll give him some chances. But if they struggle for an extended period of time, I think his job. So those five are the guys I think are on the chopping block.
And I don't disagree with any of those choices, Richie. And I think another coach I would throw in there is Michel Therrien.
That's a good one, too.
And that's for the simple fact that...
I think he's got a lot out of that team, though.
The core of this team has stayed the same for quite a while now.
But let me ask, but conference final and second round, I mean, were they better on paper than that? I don't think they were.
Ooh, that's a good question.
They lost they lost to the better team, Tampa Bay and the Rangers the year before. Those were better than those teams. They were better than the Habs.
Well, I think the Rangers and the Lightning were better teams. I think the better team won. I think that you still are... It goes back to the lack of support for the top scorers on the Montreal Canadiens. And that the defense wasn't as good last year as it was the previous year when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. I still think the Habs defense leaves a little bit to be desired. It's a little bit top heavy, and you know
he could be, and again
I'm not talking about necessarily a coach who I think is going to be the first to be fired. I'm talking about coaches that have a lot of pressure on them to do better than they did the previous year. Like, for example, coaches that have little pressure on them, I would say right now, are Joel Quenneville and John Cooper. Just because they went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. I mean, I don't think there's pressure on John Cooper right now. And you know, you mentioned Mike Johnston, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, again, similar situation to a Montreal Canadiens or St. Louis Blues with Ken Hitchcock. This team isn't happy with just making the playoffs. I mean, there's only a certain window where Crosby and Malkin are going to be able to be dominant players in the NHL. I'm not saying it's 1 year or 2 years, but it's probably 3-4 more years here. You know, where they have to make some hay in the playoffs, right? So, you know, I think Mike Johnston is a good choice, and you know, it goes back to what we said before. I think there's a lot of pressure on some of the younger coaches as well. There's a lot of pressure on Mike Babcock. You know, he signed a long-term contract, so you'd say, why would there be pressure on him? Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on him to change the culture of that dressing room and kind of change the aura around the team early on, right? I mean, that job also falls on Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello to change the culture of the team and kind of bring this team, you know, into the next chapter here. But I think there's a lot of... you know, pressure on Mike Babcock, and I don't think this team's going to be very good. I think some people, you know, think that the Leafs are maybe a dark horse to make the playoffs. I think it's going to be a long year.
Oh God, any more Leafs talk is unbelievable. We've got we've got a few tweets, by the way, and I got some text. So there is another area code. I should apologize. And apparently it's 4.
That's what I said.
It's 431. So I'll be always saying 204.
I don't know anyone that has a 431 area code. So maybe some people can tweet at us that are in that 431 area code, maybe up in Flin Flon or...
No, I think it's like here.
Is it in Winnipeg?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I'm pretty sure that's... I don't think it's just... It's just north. Yeah, who's calling us right now?
Is that a 431 area code?
When we come back, I want to talk about the Jets goaltending. We have some people want to hear some more Jets.
Whatever you say, Alexander Graham Bell.
Pavlik's job, should it be secure based on last year? Hutchinson, Hellebuck, Comrie. A lot of things to talk about when we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Just past 11:30 on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday, September 19th, Richard Pollock. And Ezra Ginsberg in studio. The segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, Richie, you always keep them separated, and I think it's a good music choice by Rory Offspring, right? Drew... having his firstborn.
Is that the play on it, Rory? Was that, or is he like overthinking it? Really? Wow. Rory was going to say yes regardless because he just gets credit for being thoughtful.
See, Richie, I pick up those subtleties that Rory is dropping. You know, Rory doesn't just play a song. There's a purpose. There's a reason.
I like that, by the way.
Yeah.
Purpose, reason. Let's talk about the Jets goaltending. People want to hear it. They're at the Fan Fest. They're driving to the Fan Fest. They're driving around today. Or they're listening on their phones or at home. The question that Drew had actually posed before in the show plan is, and I think it's a good question, Ezzy, does Andre Pavlik's play at the end of last season, specifically in the regular season, does that make him the clear-cut number one entering the 2015-16 season? Meaning, there's really no training camp battle. It's just a matter of getting him ready for game one.
Yeah. And when you finish the season the way Andre Pavlik finished the season, I think he's earned back that number one role. And, you remember, Rich, last season, how Paul Maurice, for the majority of the season, even well into the second half of the season, was sticking to that kind of 1A, 1B, I'm going to go with set rotation until Michael Hutchinson ran away with it a little bit, and then he started to play Michael Hutchinson more, and he started to give him more starts. And then he struggled. And then they went back to Andre Pavlik, and Andre Pavlik struggled a little bit and then started to play a lot better, and especially down the stretch when he had a couple of shutouts there towards the end of the season, the third last game and the second last game. He is the number one goalie.
Do you think he prefers to have a one go-to guy, or he likes the rotation?
You're talking about Paul Maurice?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's tough for me to answer that, Rich. I mean, from my observations of the last couple of years in Winnipeg and, before that in Carolina and Toronto, I'd have to think that, yes, he would prefer to have one goalie. But again, when you have...
Like, he played Andre Cam Ward 69, 68 games. Like, he played him a ton.
Yeah. Which speaks to how he likes to ride one goalie. I think there's no question that Andre Pavlik wants to play more, but what goalie doesn't? You don't think if you ask Michael Hutchinson, Richie,
of course.
He wants to play 60 games, what is he going to say? No? Oh, I only want to play 30 games. I only want to play 40 games this year. 60, that's too much. I mean, I think any goalie wants to play more as much as they can. I mean, within reason. I don't think that, most goalies want to play 75 games in a year.
Hardly anybody does anymore,
right,
too.
Yeah, Marty Broder's kind of the last of that era.
And he played on a team and in a system that didn't have him overworked to 45 shots a night.
Right, and even like a Braden Holtby played 70 games last year, right?
I believe it was 70, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, even that is, I think the Washington Capitals probably want to play him a little bit less. Barry Trotz would probably tell you himself that they're probably going to play Braden Holtby less.
Played in 73 games last
year. Yeah, so, I mean, that was the most in the NHL. Back to the question, though, Rich, I think that, Michael Hutchinson surprised me big time well he played. And that was one of the reasons why the Jets got off to such a good start there and got themselves in a playoff position for most of the year and just stayed there, right?
His numbers halfway through the year were unsustainable.
They were.
Yeah.
Just because he'd never done it before. I mean, for a rookie goalie to come in and play like he played, yes, there was going to be a regression at some point in the season. Now, that's not to say that Michael Hutchinson can't play more than Andre Pavlik this year, but I think based on 1 year of Michael Hutchinson and Andre Pavlik sharing the crease, I think the logical conclusion would be that Andre Pavlik is going to be the number one goaltender. And I know everyone's going to say, again, I'm showing kind of a favoritism towards Andre Pavlik, but I'm not. I mean, I think right now they have two good goalies, and they're going to have two good goalies in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose, with Eric Comrie and Connor Hellebuck.
Do you see Connor Hellebuck pushing it all up, passing in some form Hutchinson or Pavlik at all this season?
No. And I know that a lot of people, a lot of fans out there, are excited about Connor Hellebuck and Eric Comrie, and they should be. I mean, Connor Hellebuck, he's won the Mike Richter Award, playing with UMass, and, the guy is a top prospect. He is the best goalie prospect, or at the very least, a top five goalie prospect right now. And then Eric Comrie's not that far behind.
People have to be aware, though, Ezzy, and I think he had a great year based on, I watched him play a few minutes of the World Championship, so I can't speak to his game at all. But I can tell you this, goalies are so unpredictable, right? And so I'm not questioning that he's a top-end goalie prospect, but you see Jack Campbell, you see John Gibson, guys who are very well-regarded for long periods
Malcolm
of time.
Subban.
It's tough with goaltending. That's why they're so risky to draft high sometimes. There are very few Carey Prices out there. I'm not saying that he can't be great, but just it's difficult to predict.
And then you throw in the fact that you have two goaltenders who are coming off of great seasons. So if you have two really good goaltenders, Connor Hellebuck? I don't know if there's anything Connor Hellebuck can do in training camp or the preseason to steal. We know that Pavlik isn't going to go down to the AHL, and we know that right. Michael Hutchinson, I don't believe he's on a two-way contract either, is he?
I believe he is.
Or he might be, but
two-way deal.
I might be wrong about that, but Pavlik is definitely not on a two-way contract.
So, he's not, yes.
So Hellebuck has to outplay Michael Hutchinson enough during preseason to win that job. And
Do you think they're competing for the starting? I personally don't think there's a competition for the starting role. I think it's Pavlik and then Hutchinson backing up, and then Hutchinson might be challenged throughout the season by those other guys.
I think the Jets want Connor Hellebuck to play 60 games in the AHL this year. I think the Jets want him to be in the AHL for one more year. We know Eric Comrie is definitely going to be in the AHL this year because he's fourth on the depth chart. I'm not saying that I think the only way Connor Hellebuck plays significant time in the
NHL
this year.
Hutchinson was two-way last year, one-way this year.
Okay. Let's see. You know what, Richie? I'm right
some
of the time.
Absolutely.
So how does that even work then? I mean, if they're both on one-way contracts.
They both have to go through waivers if you're going to. Well, Pavlik's not going to claim no waivers, I don't think.
But you want to put Michael Hutchinson on waivers?
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends if he
struggles. You want to put either of those players on waivers? I don't think they do right now.
I think the Jets are going to go in with the season with Pavlik Hutchinson with not much of a battle, and I totally agree with the development of the goaltenders. Let them play in the AHL. Let them, you know, don't put too much pressure on them. I do think, though, if there are significant struggles at the NHL level with those two netminders, and I think that's quite possible, then there's going to be some questions that need to be answered. I'm not so sure it's going to be Pavlik Hutchinson throughout the whole year. I would be surprised, actually, if it's those two guys the entire season.
But then you're going to run into a situation where you have to put someone on waivers. Or you have to carry three goalies on your active roster,
right,
which I don't. Teams don't like to do.
Injuries and stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely, and that's why I'm saying Connor Hellebuck probably will get into some games this year, but I wouldn't expect him to be the backup goaltender when October 8th hits.
Yeah, and that doesn't exactly, and that's the, if you're going to be developing the guy, then he's got to play, right? And I think the plan is to keep it as it was last year, and the end result numbers will lead you to believe that's the best plan. I'm not going to say I'm entirely convinced with both goalies. I'm going to say I'm not entirely convinced with both of those goalies on the active roster, and I think that could lead to some kind of changes in the middle of the season.
Richie, I'll say this much. I definitely have less questions than I did before last year. I thought Michael Hutchinson was going to get into 15 or 20 games last year as a backup, so he surprised me.
He totally. If you're a Jets fan, pleasant surprise.
Pleasant surprise.
Absolutely.
And Andre Pavlik, to me, had a bounce-back year. I mean, this is a guy who's got 2 years left on his contract, right? And so, you know, the thinking would be, okay, well, let's see how Andre Pavlik plays this year, especially coming up, and then determine what the future for him is. And then you have a Connor Hellebuck, you have an Eric Comrie in the system. They can come in gradually, and you still have Michael Hutchinson there as a veteran to kind of insulate them, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if, again, if a year from now we're still having the same conversation, right? Because Pavlik's still going to be under contract, and Michael Hutchinson most likely will be under contract. The only way they don't sign him is if they don't believe that he's better than Hellebuck.
Well, when you have the Scheifele-Lowry contracts up at the end of this upcoming season, and Trouba and Hutchinson, it's only so much money to go around. And does the Jets sign him to a deal when they have Pavlik for another year, 3.9, when they have two goalies in the system that they think might be capable of taking that spot? I mean, at some point, there's too many players for not enough spots.
And again, this is a great problem
for
Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy and Chevy to have, because now you have...
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, it is
a
lot of goalie
depth.
Playing well.
Depth
is better than no depth.
Yeah, you don't want it to be a distraction. And you don't want it to be a situation with Vancouver, you know, where, you know, it lingers on and you have unhappy goaltenders and all that stuff. So, for the time being, Pavlik is the man. And, you know, Connor Hellebuck and Eric Comrie are not that far away from being regular NHL goalies.
I would agree with that. Does Pavlik's play in the playoffs concern you at all, or too short of a period of time?
Not at all. Yeah. I didn't think Pavlik was that bad, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think he was excellent.
Yeah.
I don't think Freddie Anderson was excellent in that series or in the playoffs at all. I think he was good.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the reason why they won that. Pardon me. When the reason why the Jets were swept wasn't. Doesn't fall on
no,
Henry
I mean,
Pavlik. They had tons of injuries. They were giving up leads. They had leads.
They were outplayed.
And again, you know, they were exactly. They were beat by a better team.
We got one last segment. Going to bring rapid fire out, and we got some cheers and jeers. We'll probably figure out what our cheers are going to be today. Our buddy Drew, but. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Next week is our fantasy hockey preview. We'll talk some Jets at the beginning, of course. Then we're going to break down who you should pick, defensemen, forwards, goalies, sleepers, and everything else. One of our favorite shows. And then the week after that, of course, is our NHL season preview show. 3 hours. That is a blast. One of our favorite shows. This segment's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
Yeah, we're going to have Keener on next week.
Awesome.
Our newest sponsor on Illegal Curve, and we're super pumped up about that. And we're going to have Keener on, and we're going to talk jerseys. And I could talk jerseys all day long. I'm a big
Eddie
fan. I have a bit of a jersey collection myself. I know you do too, Richie. So it's going to be good to have Keener on next week.
Well, it's great to have a local place making the jerseys, and
yep.
And we could talk jerseys for a while. You know, a lot of guys who are, you know, I can get back into the old third jerseys, of the Statue of Liberty, New York Rangers jerseys of the '90s, and certain ones of my favorites that I have in the old closet there. So that's always fun.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire is here, and we're ready to go. Ezzy, you good to go?
Richie, I was born ready.
Canucks coach Willie Desjardins will not be with the team in Prince George for the start of training camp. He's recovering from hip surgery, and doctors refuse to clear him to attend camp. Desjardins expects he will be able to coach midway through the exhibition schedule. Do you think his absence from camp will have any effect on the team?
It shouldn't. I mean, first off, we wish him the best in his recovery.
He's listening, I'm sure.
But, I mean, you got Glenn Gullitson there. You got Doug Lidster there. And former Jets head coach Perry Pern is also an assistant coach in Vancouver. So, I mean, these guys will be able to, you know, go about business. So, I mean, yeah, Willie Desjardins, unfortunate that he doesn't get a full training camp, Richie, and he has to miss some exhibition games. But these guys are professionals, and they have a good coaching staff there. So they'll be all right.
This week, Simon Gagné retired, ex of the Flyers, Lightning, Kings, and Bruins. He played 822 regular season games and 109 playoff games. And, of course, won gold in the 2002 Olympics and the Cup, well, less so maybe if you remember him, the Cup in 2012 with the LA Kings. Do you think, Ezzy, overall that Simon Gagné was an underappreciated player?
Who did Gagné play with during the Olympics?
Sakic like, Aginla.
I was going to say, yeah. I remember Aginla, yeah.
That was 2002.
Yeah. Will he be an underappreciated player? I mean, Simon Gagné had injury problems towards the end of his career, and, you know, he ended up winning a cup with the Kings, albeit, you know, in a reduced role with the Kings. He only played 4 games that year, I think.
If you're picking a team to remember him, that's clearly
the Flyers. He played with the Flyers for, what, 10 years? So I don't think he'll be an underappreciated player. I mean, he was an excellent player. He was a guy that, you know, he had a couple of 40-goal years, I believe. So I don't think he's underappreciated. He had an excellent career. I think maybe the way it finished wasn't the way he wanted it to finish. But, you know, he got a Stanley Cup. He has an Olympic gold. I think that's a pretty darn good career.
47 goals in 2005-06. You're just knocking off stats out of the blue, and you're getting them all right here. 41 goals, 2006-2007. Pretty impressive. And I got to tell you, I agree with you that I don't think he was underappreciated. I think when you play this at the level that he did in 2002, maybe he wasn't a big deal back then. He only played about 150 games or so. But when he came on to the scene and was the top line really at the Olympics, I mean, he was appreciated. I thought he got his due and was a really good player, a smart player. And as you mentioned, the injuries really did hamper him. I mean, he went from 47, 41 goals to 34 in 08, 09 and then never getting more than 17. So, but a really good, really good career. One of the players I did enjoy watching a lot. USA Hockey has announced that Buffalo, St. Louis, and Pittsburgh are the three remaining cities vying for the 2018 World Junior Hockey Championships. Initially, there were five cities bidding, but Chicago and Tampa have been eliminated from contention. Buffalo and Grand Forks were the last two American cities to host the World Juniors. Do you think the World Juniors can be successful in the U.S. in a city that isn't within a driving distance of a large Canadian city?
I do, and Buffalo is the new home of the NHL Draft Combine. They've got that great new Harbor Center facility, Richie. It's really becoming kind of the new home of hockey in the U.S. In Buffalo, that's kind of what they're trying to do with the, you know, U.S. National Development Program that's based in Michigan.
Can you go back to Buffalo again? You're just there.
Well, and it did well there. I mean, it doesn't do as well as it does in major Canadian cities, but, I mean, that's because hockey is more popular here.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not popular and it's not growing in the U.S., but, yeah, I do. And you know, Pittsburgh, again, I've never been to Pittsburgh. I've been to Philadelphia.
They have a new training facility, too.
They have a new training facility. The arena is still pretty new.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's within the last 5 years. So, I mean, I think Pittsburgh would be a good choice. And all of these cities, St. Louis included, I mean, we've been to St. Louis before. We saw a Cardinals game there, was mm-hmm. that 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
3 years ago, yeah.
I mean, St. Louis is a fantastic city. So I think those three are all great choices.
It's in Finland this year, the tournament. The tournament has to branch out. You can't be in Toronto every 2 years. I mean,
I agree with you 100%, Rich. I mean, I've said this before. I think the tournament should be in Red Deer. You know, I think it should be in Kamloops. I think it should be in smaller Canadian cities. I don't think...
Do we have the AC/DC song Money Talks here?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Rich. So whether it's Buffalo, Pittsburgh, or St. Louis, I think, you know, I'm
think
sure
Pittsburgh or St. Louis has to be the
option. That city will do a great job.
I think Pittsburgh would be a great choice.
I agree.
Give it a shot. You got to get... It can't just be a Canadian tournament. If it's only important to one country, it loses importance.
Yeah, and it kind of bothers me when people say it's never going to be in Winnipeg again or it's never going to be in Grand Forks again because the 99 tournament was amazing and at the time set records for attendance.
Absolutely.
And that was in the old Winnipeg Arena. And then 2005, Grand Forks, the Ralph Engelstad Arena was filled with Canadians. And I mean, I guess that's contrary to what I was saying, that the tournament can't be successful without being an hour from the border. But I mean, these are big hockey markets.
You need to test it out, right?
Yeah.
You need to test it out. You need to give it a shot. And if you're not gaining any traction anywhere else, then how much meaning is this tournament going to have?
Yeah. It shouldn't just be about money. It should be about giving cities the opportunity.
Grow the game. It should be about growing the game.
Absolutely. Have it in California.
Well, they have 13 teams there now. NHL announced that they're in the process of hiring 30 independent concussion spotters. I found this really interesting. These spotters will log all instances where they think there are any visible signs of a player suffering a concussion. Because most teams employ an in-house concussion spotter, the league concussion spotter will not have any contact with the team's trainer. They will simply be there to take notes. If the league concussion spotter has no authority and no contact with a team's trainer, is this just a show by the league to be able to claim publicly and in court proceedings that they are taking the issue of concussion seriously? That's a very Drew question.
Well,
right there.
I don't think that this is... I don't think that these concussion spotters are there just to show that the NHL is taking concussion seriously. I think the NHL and the NHLPA have shown that they've worked together well on this issue and they are taking concussion seriously. I think this is just another step in that ongoing process, right? And, you know, I think anything to reduce concussions in hockey or the amount of... the ability to deal with post-concussion symptoms is a good thing. So, I mean, it can't hurt to have people in the crowd, Rich, and, you know, off ice, you know, trying to spot concussions and hopefully reduce, you know, the after effects of these concussions. So, I mean, I, you know, concussions are complicated and, you know, hockey is a very physical sport, as you know, Richie.
Well, some skating evidence this week from the NFL about players with CTE. It's scary stuff, right? So, I mean, anything, even if it's for show, quote unquote, at least it's better than nothing. Anything is better than nothing on this issue, right?
Yep.
In Penticton at the Prospects Tournament, Jake Virtanen, himself a former first-round pick, hit, as classic Drew, His Holiness Connor McDavid with a clean hit. After the hit, Derek Van Dijst of the Edmonton Sun tweeted the following: Virtanen is a marked man now, which is the right thing for the Oilers to do. Clean hit or not, McDavid is off limits. Hashtag meal ticket. Is the idea of certain players being off limits still applicable in 2015? And do you expect the Oilers to target Virtanen for retribution?
That is such a Drew question.
Oh, man, what a Drew question that is.
It's funny, Rich, you know, reading the Gretzky book by Al Strachan, he touches on that, you know, this idea that Wayne Gretzky was untouchable. Well, it wasn't that he was untouchable. It was that if you did decide to hit him, Dave Semenko was going to jump over the boards and have something to say to you. So
it was you couldn't get to him either, because he was so smart.
Exactly. That whole element that Wayne Gretzky was so elusive, and, you know, Gary Suter went after Wayne Gretzky, right?
And cross-check in the front of the net.
So, I mean, he
did later to Paul Kariya.
Exactly. And he wasn't untouchable. I mean, guys did go after Wayne Gretzky. No, I mean, Connor McDavid, Connor McDavid is fair game just like any other player. I mean, guys can hit Connor McDavid. I don't think anybody's going to take it easy on Connor McDavid. And he knows that defensemen and forwards are going to come after him. As far as the Oilers, you know, seeking retribution on Jake Virtanen, I think that, you know, the Oilers are going to be more preoccupied with winning the hockey game. If something happens, it's going to have to do with something that happens on the ice. At the time, not something that happened in the preseason.
You watch Sidney Crosby, though. The players treat him differently, and I think they should. And I have no issue with the Oilers sticking up for McDavid, because the league needs to have this guy playing. I'm not saying that you need to act in violent ways. I'm saying that you need to protect. You need to be able to have a guy feel like he's protected out there, because he's the most important player coming into the league in the last 10 years. And for all the guys like that, like Virtanen and such, I mean, you still need your best players out there. It's like protecting the quarterback in the NFL. They do a great job of that. Ezzy, can we do a collective cheer, Mazel Tov, to Drew, and for having his child? Jokes aside, it's great news. When he's back, he will be in this chair. The Jays' start time today is actually to be noted. The Toronto Blue Jays game starts at 3 o'clock today. It's a late start in Toronto. I think R.A. Dickey is on the bump. Thanks to Joe Haggerty of CSN New England. Thanks to Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Thanks to Chris Zelkovich of Yahoo Sports. Thanks to Rory McGoran, did a great job here as an op. Ezzy Ginsberg, as always. We'll see you next week for our fantasy preview show. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.